Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Occasionally, a time will come when we need someone to speak up for us, when it's important to have our voices heard, and times when we need to defend our own rights. Now, who do we go to for this help, and how can they help us? To answer these questions and more is Colette Wildig from Dudley Advocacy, and Colette joins me in the studio now. Hello, Colette.
Hello.
Thank you very much for joining me. Now, I looked up in the dictionary earlier on the definition of advocacy, which is public support for a cause or a policy, and that's what it says. How does that fit into what Dudley Advocacy does?
Okay, so Dudley Advocacy is an independent service. We support people with learning disabilities and difficulties, and we would support them to be empowered, oppose discrimination, be listened to, uphold their human rights and express their views. We're 100% user-led, so it's about empowering that person to have choice and control in their lives.
Describe to me what you mean by user-led.
Okay, user-led means that the person that we're supporting is in the driving seat, and we are simply supporting them to get the outcomes that they want.
I'm with you. So how long have you been in existence then?
So Dudley Advocacy first started in 1995, and we were formed as a charity, became a registered charity in 98, and then a company limited by guarantee in 2005.
Right. So you've clearly been around, you know, a long time.
27 years, I think, Clive.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, tell me about your role within Dudley Advocacy.
Okay, so I'm the Volunteer Development Officer. So I recruit, train and support volunteer advocates. I've done that for about 11 years, mm-hmm. and I love my job. I'm really lucky to meet and support some wonderful people. So
you've done that for 11 years. What did you do prior to that?
So I've been with Dudley Advocacy for 11 years.
Oh, right, I'm with you.
Yeah, my current role, I've been in for about 7 years.
I'm with you.
I started with Dudley Advocacy. I'd taken voluntary redundancy with Birmingham City Council.
Right.
And I was going to become self-employed, and Dudley Advocacy was actually a stopgap.
And you're still there.
And I'm still there. So I started there as an administrator 11 years ago.
Excellent.
And then I loved it so much that I wanted to learn more about advocacy, how we could support people.
I'm with you.
And it grew from there.
So for example, how would you help me if I needed the help of Dudley Advocacy? What sort of scenario could I bring to you or problem, whatever phrase you want to use, and how would you support me through that?
Right, okay. So the people that we support at Dudley Advocacy would be adults 18 plus with a mild to moderate learning disability. Mm-hmm. They would have to have capacity to make a referral themselves, mm-hmm. or to allow somebody to make a referral on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So the sorts of issues that we would support with would be housing. So you might have a problem with housing within your home. It could be housing repairs. It could be that the person needs an OT assessment in their home.
That's occupational therapy.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, it
I got
is.
That right. Yeah.
Could be finance issues. So it could be that the person's having financial problems, and a volunteer might go in and help them to look at different providers that would save them money. They might want to open a different sort of bank account. Mm-hmm. social inclusion as well.
Sure.
As you know, with COVID, people have become more socially isolated.
Yeah.
So our volunteer advocates have just provided a lifeline throughout that period, and they have done before that. One of our outcomes is that we try to make people less socially excluded. Parenting issues, so we could have a parent with a learning disability who may have issues with the child. They may have access arrangement issues, and the volunteer would support them at court or solicitors meetings. As you know, the jargon, legal jargon, can be a minefield, so it would just be the advocate would go with them and just make sure that the information was accessible so that they could understand the information presented to them. We support with complaints.
So really quite a wide cross section,
it is,
really.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
For example, if I was somebody who had Asperger's, for example, now people who experience Asperger's can't cope with certain situations particularly well, and you know, if they're having a difficulty with a landlord, let's use that as an example. And they were, you know, about to be evicted, but there seemed to be a lack of understanding between the landlord and the person, you know, what the problem was. How do you step in? What would you do for me if I was sitting in front of you now?
Okay, I think the first thing would be, the first thing we do with everybody is explain what we do. So what we do, what we don't do, and we build a trusting relationship with that person. So they know the boundaries. We would ensure that that person, their views were represented. So I would come to you and say, Clive, what is it? What is the outcome that you would like? What is the outcome? What do you want from your landlord? What is the issue? Would you want, I'd look at the options for you. So I wouldn't be making any decisions. You'd be doing that, but I would gather all the information that you needed to make the decision. Now, whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision, that would be up to you, because I'd make sure that you would have all the information you need to make an informed decision.
And you would explain the pros and cons to that person?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Liaise with the landlord as well, if that was something that you needed. Mm-hmm. Just make you aware of your rights as well. So you were fully informed mm-hmm. of any decisions.
And this is done as a face-to-face visit? Or is it done virtually or by telephone, or how do
yeah,
you do it?
We just try to accommodate the person. Mm. It really is person-centred. So throughout COVID, obviously, there have been some restrictions.
Sure.
Where people that we see and some of the settings that in the housing placements that we see would be... it would have to be virtual, but we will always try and accommodate that person.
You see, if you've got somebody perhaps who has been evicted by their landlord, which they feel is unjust, I'll use this as an example, and they have no option but to live on the streets, basically. They won't have access to the internet and such like, so they would need to do it via personal visit.
Yeah, and we have people that do prefer face-to-face. We could have somebody that's hearing impaired, so they would need to lip read.
What about somebody who's where English isn't their first language?
We'd always try and... some of the staff at Dudley Advocacy do speak different languages, and if they didn't, then I'd try and locate somebody. I would try not to ensure that there weren't any barriers.
Yes.
That's what advocacy is about.
I mean, the thing is, it's difficult because you can't cover absolutely every situation that you're presented with, but I think it's best endeavours, isn't it, really?
Mm.
You know?
I mean, yeah, we are diverse. Our volunteers, our staff, our trustees, you know, so we've got people that are from different cultures, with disabilities, hearing impaired. So we would always find somebody to ensure that that person was supported.
So you take it from a positive and proactive point of view. How do you support your volunteers and staff?
Okay, so we have regular team meetings, and our chief officer has regular committee meetings with our trustees. With the volunteers, they have one-to-ones. Over the last 18 months, 2 years, if at times it's been up to them, if they feel comfortable to come in and have a chat one-to-one, then we've done that. If not, we can have Zoom meetings, phone calls. Every year we have the Glen Mills Volunteers Award. That's in memory of one of our staff members who we lost to cancer, and we give the volunteers a paperweight in her memory, and that's really, really difficult because all of the volunteers deserve that. Sure. Genuinely every year. But we decide on one volunteer who's just done something really outstanding. As you can imagine, it is really difficult.
Yeah, I would imagine. Not a decision I'd like to make, that's for sure.
No, it's not. So we have the awards. We have meetings, coffee mornings. Try to encourage the volunteers. At the moment, we're recruiting. So
I'll come on to that in a second. Yes, you are.
So they will help with promoting that as well. Putting posters in the local area, in the libraries, in their churches. So they're very much part of it. We've got volunteers as well that help with the website and social media. So, you know, if people, for whatever reason, want to do something as well as or instead of supporting people, there are other opportunities as well.
How many of you are there, including staff and volunteers?
Okay.
Roughly.
This is where I count on my fingers. So at the moment we've got, I'm going to say about 8 volunteers that are actually matched with partners. However, a lot of those volunteers may have 2 or 3 partners, partnerships. And then staff-wise, we've got our chief officer, Linda Nark, senior advocate, IMCA, different statutory advocates as well. So I think we've got about 7 members of staff.
Yeah. A nice number to have, though, isn't it, really? Now, as you say, you're a charity. How are you funded? Because all this costs, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. So my project, the Volunteers Project, is funded by the Tudor Trust, and they're based in London, and they tend to fund smaller community-led groups. It's an independent grant-making trust supporting people who are at the margins of society.
Right.
So, as I say, the funding does expire next August.
Then what happens?
Hopefully somebody else funds us.
And so if they don't?
They have to.
But if they don't, then is that the end of the advocacy?
It would be, yeah. So we are always looking for people that would fund. I can't imagine the project not being around because the people with learning disabilities that slip through the net it's just crazy, you know. There's so many vulnerable people that would be left without any support if the volunteer project didn't run. So it's hard to imagine that.
Sure. Now, you say you're looking to recruit volunteers at the moment. How many are you looking to recruit? Or is it open-ended?
Well, I would love to have another 10, 20 volunteers. However, as many. I would never turn anyone away.
No, so it's open-ended
it
then,
is,
really.
It is, yeah. Yes. Everyone's welcome to come along to the volunteer induction, to the training. And as I say, people who with skills match our volunteers. So it could be that we've had law graduates before now that are looking for a bit of courtroom experience. I might have a parent that has got an issue that goes to court. And I would skills match naturally the law graduate with that. But, you know, because
what makes a good volunteer, though? For you.
Right, okay.
What do you look for in someone?
All different backgrounds, no qualifications. We've got people that have come through our doors that are unemployed, ex-social workers, teachers, homemakers, single parents, parents with children who have got learning disabilities, autism, people that have, you know, had mental health problems. But what makes a good volunteer to me is somebody who's passionate and wants to help others, someone who believes in human rights. I think anybody who's got good listening skills, empathetic,
and also somebody that's been to the university of life, really, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that has that life experience that they can then translate into the work that you do.
Definitely, yeah. So assertive, not confrontational. I think sometimes in a meeting you can feel, you know, that you're the person that you're supporting. It's about empowering that person. And sometimes, you know, the skill of not being confrontational and remaining calm in what can be heated meetings is really, really important. Self-motivated as well. So we need people that are quite happy to take their cases on and research things that they haven't come across before and, you know, just...
Somebody open-minded, empathic,
listening
and as you say, good listening skills.
Yeah.
And is there a minimum amount of hours per week or per month that you ask for your volunteers, particularly if there's quite a large caseload, for example?
That would depend. I mean, when we've matched when the volunteers have actually completed the training, we'd have a chat about what sort of cases they're looking for, what time they've got. And we would match them with a case that would be suitable for the amount of time they could give.
And you play to their strengths as well, don't
absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, yeah. So if somebody had a minimum amount of time, we wouldn't match them with a case that was really involved and time-consuming. Anything that... anyone could give would be much appreciated.
How can we find out more, Colette?
Okay, so you can go onto our website, and that's www.dudleyadvocacy.org. You can email me at colette@dudleyadvocacy.org. You can call on 07 943 847 097. Or you can call our office 01384 456 877.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Okay, so dudleyadvocacy.org or colette@dudleyadvocacy.org or the office number 01384 456 877.
Yep.
That's super. Colette Wildig from Dudley Advocacy. Thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts from. See you very soon.
This is a Black Country Radio podcast, presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.